Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Need a cold coffee with a bold flavor? Dunkin' Cold K-Cup Pods were specially crafted for cold coffee. Brew over ice straight out of the Keurig coffee maker for smooth, delicious Dunkin' taste you know and love. Find your next Dunkin' Cold coffee in the roasted coffee aisle.
And now,
it's time for
Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast.
Theme.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi.
Welcome to Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast.
Yes, we're your hosts. I'm Jesse Gaskell, and this is the beautiful Mike Sweeney.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
No one said that since sixth grade. A girl in sixth grade said I was beautiful.
And
I remembered, I said, this is the beginning of... it's going to be a great run for me. And that was it. It was
that one. Yeah. You peaked.
I remember it clearly. Hello. How are you?
Hello. I'm fine.
Good.
Yeah. I was going to explain what the show is, but honestly, people know at this point, I think.
Yeah. Or there's a description before you click on
it. No one's listening to this by accident. It's Inside Conan. How many different Conans are there?
The only accident is us hosting it every week. No one else is here. We just fire up the equipment.
Guess we'll accidentally meet up again this week. No, I'm good. I've been doing some fun holiday stuff. I've been getting into the
holiday spirit
a little.
Like what?
This weekend we went and saw a screening of Home Alone at the Walt Disney Concert Hall.
Really?
Accompanied by the LA Philharmonic.
Is the score to that movie that...
Well, it's actually John Williams composed it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I know. I didn't really either. And we saw that they were doing
this. That whore.
I know. But it's a really good score. It's a beautiful score.
Oh.
We booked the tickets and it was sort of a joke, I guess. We were like, oh, we're going to go to Home Alone at this beautiful venue. And then we were like, haha, we spent $85 on tickets to Home Alone. Joke's on us. But then it was wonderful.
Oh.
And the orchestra, the whole orchestra was there. There was a live choir doing...
Wow.
There's choir scenes in a church and...
Oh, I thought they did the Culkin lines or something. That's a choir.
They sang them.
Right.
You filthy animal.
So they would play...
Under the dialogue, yeah. So it was a cut that didn't have the music, but they played the music live. And it was just very moving. We both cried.
Oh, really?
My boyfriend and I, yeah. It was really sweet.
Well, and that's a beautiful... Disney Hall's really...
It's so gorgeous.
Beautiful.
And we had never been, and that was part of the impetus for going, was like, we want to see something there. And
wow. Now, was John Williams there? Because I know he conducts at the Hollywood Bowl in the summer. They do five or six Star Wars.
I know.
Or no, it's all of his movie music.
Yeah. So probably Home Alone is in there.
Probably, yeah.
I don't think he was there. Okay. Although I don't really know what he looks like. So he might have been.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe he's playing the kazoo.
Right.
It was really nice. And it's all decorated for the holidays right now. And
that's
it just felt very fancy and festive.
I heard the one drawback was they accidentally played the remake of Home Alone. So...
The one with Carrot Top.
Right, that's right. It didn't quite sync up. That's great. You know, I went to one of those once, and I was a little skeptical, but it was for 2001.
Oh, cool.
A Space Odyssey at the Hollywood Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, but so much of that is music without dialogue. So that movie really lends itself to that.
Yes.
I don't know if other cities do anything like that. I never heard of such a thing till I came to Los Angeles.
It's sort of unique. I mean, because
it's an LA thing.
Everything revolves around movies here, but it's nice to find a way to incorporate.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of highbrow and lowbrow together.
Right, together.
Also,
yeah,
I made an observation. So, Kieran Culkin is in Home Alone.
Okay.
He plays a little brother.
Oh, he does?
He does, yeah.
Can you tell I've never seen that movie?
I'm starting to figure that out.
Yes, so go ahead. He's in the movie.
So he's in the movie, and there's a shot where they imply that he's going to wet the bed that night, and he looks at the camera very slyly, and I swear they recreated that exact shot in Succession when he sends his dad the dick pic. Yes, and there's that shot across the conference table at a very specific angle, and he's in the same spot that he's in Home Alone. And now my theory is that somebody did that on purpose.
Did you Google that? Because
I didn't. I didn't Google it because I just want to believe.
And now I'm wondering if bedwetters tend to be dick pickers.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe this is actually the same character all grown up.
Right. Exactly.
There's a lot of continuity.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
What are you up to, Sweens?
Oh, I'm living vicariously through you. I learned a few weeks ago, like, you know what? Whatever Jesse's doing, that's good for me. And I'll just, and now when we're done here, I'll tell people I saw Home Alone at Disney Hall. It was unbelievable. Of course, John Williams wrote the score, you fucking moron.
Well, next week, we're getting a UTI.
Yes.
I decided.
It's my first. I don't want to brag, but I've been very pristine up till now. So that's terrific. And I'll do the same course of medication with you. I'm sure it's a 10-day program. I feel like maybe we should probably introduce our guest today.
I would love to.
Let's do it.
Yeah. This week, we're speaking with the hilarious Arden Marine.
Mm-hmm.
She's an actress,
right.
Comedian extraordinaire, and
yes.
An author as well.
Yes. Wow. She's very inspiring to talk to. And she started out way back in college as an intern on Late Night with Conan O'Brien.
That's right. She is in the former intern turned celebrity club.
Right.
So here's Arden Marine. We're here with Arden Marine, actress, comedian, improviser, sketch, comedy, maven.
Memoirist. Is that how you pronounce it? Memoirist.
Extraordinaire.
Mm-hmm.
Podcast host.
Yes.
And podcast guest.
Yes.
You are. It used to be the triple threat. I don't know what the word is for
the sextuplet.
12 ways.
Dodecahedron.
Yes, yes. Thank
she
you.
Write a book while dancing. She's incredible.
That's what I did. I actually wrote the whole book while dancing. I got my steps in. Well, mm-hmm. I got my word count in, mm-hmm. people. Leave it on the field, America.
But Arden, one thing, I don't know if people know this about you, maybe everybody knows this, but you are one of the many celebrities who got their start as an intern on Late Night with Conan O'Brien.
That is correct. I was an intern year one, like semester two, you know, because I was in college. So there was, I believe, like a fall semester of interns. And then I was about like 4 months. I don't know what month it launched, but I started in January 1993. Is that accurate? Is that a
94.
Lie? 94.
But that was right after the show started. Yeah.
Right after the show started. It was right when it was getting renewed like 4 episodes at a time.
Right. That's when they said, we need Arden in here.
We need Arden. Let's get Arden. But it was really fun. And I'm still friends with some of the people that I met while working there.
Oh, that's crazy. Oh. I don't have friends for that long.
You do. You have friends.
I barely have friends from Conan, and we just wrapped in July.
Oh, that's not true. You're very, very popular.
You're very popular.
Very popular.
Jesse, Jesse. People love Jesse. Everybody loves Jesse.
Hey, I didn't say it was their choice. I maybe was the one who distanced myself.
Yes.
how did you even know to apply there? What, the show was brand new. Were you just like, I'm going to send my resume everywhere. I'm going to fax my resume.
I'm going to fax. I'm going to like carrier pigeon my resume. You know, I was at a college that I hated. It was the wrong school for
that
me.
Helps.
And yeah, I couldn't afford to transfer out of there. Like I'd gotten into other, like I got into like NYU, I got into yeah. UMichigan, but they wouldn't accept my credits. Like, so I could transfer, but I would have had to pay for like another year of school.
I'm just curious why you hated that school.
You know, it was not the school's fault. It was really the operator. It was my fault.
Uh-huh.
I didn't look at it. I went to Colorado College. It's a very nice school.
Yeah.
I didn't look at it. My best friend looked at it.
Oh, that's how you do it.
You're like, just sign me up for whatever you're doing. It's fine.
I just followed her there. And so she went and like had the best weekend, like hot guys on bicycles, brought her to Garden of the Gods. Like it's actually a very good school. It's academically right. a good school.
Right.
But I am not a professional rock climber. You know, it's just not the school for me. So thankfully, they had like an arts program in Chicago. So right before here, I did 6 months in Chicago at Improv Olympic, where I was there. I was like Sharna's intern, and the home team was Adam McKay and Neil Flynn and Matt Besser and
oh, wow.
Horatio and like Rachel Dratch.
Wow.
Anyway, it was like this amazing group of people that was right before they went to Second City. And I got to take classes from Del Close, and I had to have a fake ID to perform there because I was only 19.
Oh, because it was a bar.
And it was in a bar. It was at the Wrigley side in Wrigleyville. So that was sort of the opening of – I mean, I always knew I wanted to do comedy. I was from this tiny town in Rhode Island. I had no connections. And that was the beginning of being around. The gift of me not fitting in at my school was that and not being able to afford to transfer – I sort of got scrappy. I actually think the path was how it was supposed to go down. And so I went to Chicago. I met all these amazing people. And then I didn't want to go back to school. And I figured out, because I was a theater major.
And you were like, I don't need a degree to work in comedy. Right. It's actually a hindrance.
No, true story. And so I applied to Letterman. I applied to Conan. And I feel like there was like two other places. Letterman never got back. Basically, Conan was the place that got back to me. And I nothing against the other interns, but like the first batch were not that on it. It was like the dregs of the only person who was – there was two people that were on it. It was Brad Walsh and Jeff Audio, who all like ended up like working there, I think. Or Brad.
Jeff Audio did. Maybe Brad Walsh. I don't remember that.
Brad became like an executive producer or a producer on Modern Family.
Okay.
So he's a writer. So like those were the two that were on it. The rest of the batch were so terrible that the three of us, they gave responsibilities. So it was sort of a gift again to sort of – because it was brand new and these other interns were not on it and Letterman didn't call me back.
Right.
I was the assistant to the script supervisor, Brenda Ventura, who was like, who went on to become De Niro's assistant. And she was like, what's your name again? Auden, what the fuck kind of name is that? Look at you with your long blonde hair and your big fucking boobs. And then
I think I see why De Niro liked her.
Yeah, but she was great. We ended up becoming like best friends. I loved her. I got to go be down on the floor during rehearsal because she was doing like Robert Smigel's script. Like Robert would hand write out his scripts. And she
Robert
would
Smigel
sort of,
was the original head writer on the show.
Yeah, she had to like keep track of his changes. And then I got to sit with her in the control room during the taping. So it was so interesting to on a variety of ways to learn what each person did on a TV show. Like growing up in a town with a general store, like I knew I wanted to do this, but it was good to know. I knew what each department did because I'd have to go deliver the scripts and watch everybody.
Right.
And then it was also interesting to see a show getting launched and a show finding its feet and watching the show get off the ground, which I was always a huge fan of. And it was really interesting to watch, like, be there for that moment in time.
Right.
Because I just thought Conan was so funny, you know, and I thought – and Robert was so brilliant. And, you know, like, I remember, like, in the year 2000, like, watching all these sketches and watching this stuff and then feeling – I remember it felt like there was – like Craig Kilborn was circling the building in a jetpack and like John Stewart was circling the building in a jetpack of like
there were a lot of rumors.
The vultures, yeah.
Yeah. And it was just interesting, like, and how cool knowing that Conan like like, just knowing how the story ends, that, like, he thrived and became, like, you know, an icon. And it was interesting to watch this, and I really had a great time.
But also good to be just an intern at that time and
right.
be like, I'm 20, so it doesn't really matter to me what happens.
No, yeah, exactly. Like, I had no skin in the game. I made $12.50 a week.
But did you also feel a loyalty to this new show?
Like, oh, for sure. Absolutely. Like, yeah.
Identify with it?
Oh, my God. Absolutely. I mean, like, I'm a quirky gal, and, like, Conan kind of reminds me of my brother, and, like, absolutely, you know, I grew up looking like Barb from Stranger Things. like I felt like I'm a natural redhead who looks like Barb from Stranger Things when I was like 16 years old and like from New England. And like, right. here's this guy. Like, he reminded me of my brother's friends. And
so you weren't intimidated. You were like, I'm just going to dive right in. And what was your intern personality? Were you like, I'm going to hustle. I want to be plucky and have moxie and show up for stuff? Or were you kind of just taking it all in?
Quietly observing. And
yeah.
I would say I would be plucky and moxie, but I think because I just come from in Chicago, I knew that you also couldn't be super thirsty. You know what I mean? So, like,
right.
I just tried to – it was really overwhelming at first because – I mean, I was basically like an unpaid PA. So, like,
right.
the first day, they were like, here's a list of like 100 people. You have to write their names on the scripts and you have to deliver it to each of the. And, like, you know, I didn't know who any of the people were. It was in 30 Rock. There was bowels of the building. Like, when the, mm-hmm. I would have to go, like, when the copiers broke, there was like secret elevator. It felt very like being John Malkovich. There's all these weird bowels of like the windowless parts of 30 Rock.
Right.
And so it was a combo of. Were you guys ever waiters? Did you ever mm-hmm. waiter?
Like, well, actually, no. I never made it to waiter, just hostess.
So, like, if you ever waitered, like, that when you're brand new in that first day and you just feel like an idiot and you don't know where everything is, you don't know what table, like, you just feel like such an idiot. Like, so I would say in the very beginning, it was more just, like, sink or swim. So just, like, do a good job, be on time, try to get everybody the right thing. And then as I sort of got the lay of the land and Brenda and I became pals— You know, it was really fun, and I think I had personality and was definitely plucky, but also knew it wasn't my show. I knew I was an intern, and I felt like people were sort of inclusive of me because I wasn't a threat. I was just sort of, you know, doing a good job and could get mm-hmm. – if you gave me a task, I could get it done, and I was pleasant.
Wow, that's very valuable. That's not always the case.
That's
so,
rare.
Yes.
I know. And I think that's why you stood out.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
No, I mean, truly, like, I was one of the ones that could get it done. And so then they would then mm-hmm. start requesting me at night to do, like, the food delivery to the writer's room and stuff. And
right.
then I was just like, look, I can't work, like, 15 hours a day. Like, I have
nothing,
after the show
yeah.
is done, I can't also be the night intern.
Right.
It's one or the other.
I like that you drew the line.
Yeah, I felt like it was like, let one of the other ones figure out how to get like Kung Pao chicken for the writers. You know what I mean?
Right.
How late were the writers staying at that time? I mean, was it?
I only did it a couple of times because it was just too, like, I was just never not there. So yeah. I just was like, I can't do this too.
That's a smart move. When I started there, it was 95. The tradition was the interns would eat with the writers. So we'd all
oh,
sit in
nice.
The conference room and eat.
We didn't have that.
That lasted around a year until one night an intern, a new, brand new intern, just sat down and goes to the head writer. He goes, so let me ask you, how much do you make doing this job?
No, I can't. I can't. I can't.
And he just kind of deflected the question. But everyone's head jerked up. And the next day, I think a memo went out, interns will no longer be dining with the writers.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Dude, can you imagine? I knew enough, I think, from being around, like, the house team at Improv Olympic. And I knew enough to just be cool. Like,
right.
even if you're terrified, just present low-key. Present not super thirsty. Like,
yeah.
know that if you're there for a certain period. I was there 5 days a week, all day, until like, the evening.
Mm-hmm.
So just present like you can hang, accomplish your task, mm-hmm. and you've got a decent person. And, like, that's it. Just be affable.
That is great advice.
Oh, my God. This is the only career advice anybody ever needs to hear.
I mean, truly.
Don't act thirsty is rule number one.
Well, I'll tell you, because then there was a new intern that came in like halfway through my tenure. So I think I was there like 6 months. So about 3 months in, there was a new intern that came in from Rutgers who was the thirstiest person I have ever met. Like who could clear a room, who was like, it was right when the book, I think Late Wars came out, like that book, the Leno, the Letterman.
Yeah. Right.
The War for Late Night.
She came in like with the book and like was so thirsty and she's like... like that, just, and so she got assigned to the desk. She was going to be like the number two script supervisor intern. Anywhere I went, she was right behind me, and she could clear a room faster and was like, so, like, Dino, did you know that? I'm like, oh my, like, just be cool. Girl, just like, just leave them alone. If they're in the middle of something, like, just get out of the room. Like, don't hang to, like, just read the room. Read the, number one, read the room. When in doubt, go back to your chair, like, until they give you another assignment. Like, do you know what I mean? Just read the room.
Those interns.
Dude.
They cut through, like, everyone knows their name within 24 hours. Because they just work that quickly at.
It's too much.
Everyone just. Going, oh my God, where did this person come from?
Yeah, people start taking other routes to avoid them.
Honestly, if you're going to be an intern in any career, it's a marathon, not a sprint. So like, the cooler you can be in the beginning, just know you'll have, like, just ease into the pool. Ease in, do not do a cannonball in. Just like, slow your roll. Don't be late. And then, like, you'll have your moments to ask questions about how people got their start or how you might get in the writer's room or how, like, whatever your dream is, just pace it out and, like, earn the right to ask the question and just observe. Just pay attention. Just see what people do for a living.
Yeah. Yeah, you're basically getting the opportunity to be a fly on the wall.
Yes.
Without any consequences of people being mad that you're not doing enough.
Yes.
Because I always think it's, what you're saying is exactly right. And you always risk doing too much too soon.
Yeah.
But no one's going to remember if you were just not present. Like, no one remembers the absence of somebody. So.
Yeah.
It's fine to be chill.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask about the page versus internship because NBC had a page program.
Yeah. They were like neckerchiefs. They still have it.
And blazers, right?
I believe at the time they were like maroon blazers and like a neckerchief, almost like a flight attendant,
or a scout.
Or a scout. Exactly.
A character heel, yeah.
That's exactly what it is. Like a nylon and a character heel.
And did you guys interact? Did the interns interact with the pages? Was there some kind of rivalry?
Yes, there was a cute page named Jen. And then I remember Jason Nash was a page. Jason was the page at SNL. And then we would I remember I'm really bad at smoking pot. I get really high for days and I'm
That's
paranoid.
The word on you.
And I remember one of the last times I got high was at Jason Nash's house. I got there was a page party and I went and I got so high that I was terrified to get a cab to go home.
You were there for 2 weeks.
I might still be there, you guys. I'm not sure. I'm still there. Yeah.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Need a cold coffee with a bold flavor? Dunkin' Cold K-Cup pods were specially crafted for cold coffee. Brew over ice straight out of the Keurig coffee maker for smooth, delicious Dunkin' taste you know and love. Find your next Dunkin' Cold coffee in the roasted coffee aisle.
Rack your look for spring at Nordstrom Rack and save up to 60% on brands you love. Rag & Bone, Vince, Marc Jacobs, Adidas, Joe's, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. Score new dresses, denim, sandals, designer bags, and sunglasses, plus updates for the family and home. Get your spring on for less, up to 60% less, today at your Nordstrom Rack store. What will you find?
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee.
With McDonald's Mix and Match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at the coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Do you have any favorite memories from working in 30 Rock? I mean, it seems like that was such a magical place for people to work.
I remember like it would be exciting when once in a while they would let me go like greet the band and stuff downstairs. Like it was when Max was still there. Like there was, you know, there was times Drew Barrymore and I are around the same age and I like loved her and I had the same little haircut with the curls. And I remember waiting downstairs like to like greet the band, but it was also like the time that she was doing like SNL and getting to like see her in the lobby, like was so exciting. And then I remember befriending like I knew some people that worked at SNL and getting to go to the some of the parties, but then getting to go to the finale party on the ice rink.
Right.
Like was so, I just couldn't believe.
Yeah.
You know, because that was always my dream. Like I couldn't believe that I was there. I mean,
in the middle of it.
I truly grew up in a town with no stoplights and a general store, and our coffee shop is like in a barn and an apple orchard. So to be like, and Gilda Radner and like Molly Shannon, and then to be at the ice rink and like there's Molly, and it was just like, I couldn't believe I was there. I could not. I remember also when Letterman came to do Conan was exciting. There was like a big thing.
That was a big thing because.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was kind of like him giving his stamp of approval to this
yes.
fledgling show and the guy who replaced him. So
yeah.
Yeah. What was that like?
I remember it was like really sort of tense that day and people, it was like sort of high security tickets were like very specific about who could be in the audience. And like everybody was sort of excited, but on edge. Like it was like everything was amped up. And I remember it went really well and like people were really excited about it. But there was a lot of like I remember even just the rumor that like Letterman's going to be here, whatever, like February 27th. Like there was a lot of
right.
that it was a coup to get it. It was exciting.
It was kind of like a countdown to his. Like he was booked a while in advance, so it was kind of a countdown.
Like
to
the
it.
King is coming, everybody.
Right.
The townspeople prepare.
And it was also like again, it was after right around when he didn't get the Tonight Show. Like there was something about like he's anointing Conan. Like mm-hmm. it was. I remember that was cool and that it went well, and the whole thing was like kind of a magical time. Like just even getting to be in the sound, getting to be in 30 Rock, like the first time. Being on that sound stage and seeing the audience and how cold it was. And like you always heard people, the guests comment like on Letterman when I would watch it growing up, like they would all talk about how, like being in that little refrigerator room and
how cold they'd keep the studio.
Yeah, how cold they'd keep the studio.
Supposedly for all the equipment, but also I think like it's good to keep the audience chilled.
Yeah, for so comedy, for sure. Absolutely. No, cold is funny, for yeah, sure.
Sure.
You know, even just like when the bands would come in and I thought Robert Smigel was so wonderful and funny and just mm-hmm. watching the characters that they would do and watching these things come to life and
right.
getting to sit in the control, like just the being in the building was, it really felt like I was Dorothy and I was starting to like crack getting into Oz. And it was like, I couldn't believe I was there.
Were you working on your own comedy at that time too? I mean, you were at 30 Rock all day, but did you have a chance to do comedy at night?
I didn't really. And then I remember at the end, they offered me a PA position. And I was aware that I just mostly was jealous of the guests after getting to know what everybody did. I was like,
the only job I want here is the one that shows up right before taping and leaves immediately after.
I was aware that unless I was like the writer's assistant, which I wouldn't have been, you know, that I I finished school and then I immediately got, like, I was waitressing and then I got an internship. The casting director from Conan, Mikey Halbrin, helped me get an internship with another casting director. And then I started doing stand-up at night. And then that's how I got my agent.
So it was very smart of you to turn down the PA job, it sounds like.
Yeah. So I started doing stand-up and it was like 80 Miles and it was Zach Galifianakis. Like, mm-hmm. everybody, we were all starting out at the same time at Stand Up New York and like the Boston Comedy Club. And so that was like the next year. Like, I just was like, I have to bet on myself and just go do this. Mm-hmm.
Did you know right away, I'm just going to move right to New York City? Or were you also thinking Chicago? Okay.
I always loved New York City. My family had, like, I grew up in Rhode Island, but my family was from New York. My mother's only requirement, my brother and I, she was like, you don't need to go to a fancy school. You don't need to get the best grades. But both of my children need to live in New York City for 2 years. And then after that, I don't really care what you do.
Oh, so, I love that was a requirement.
Literally, it was her only requirement. I was happy to oblige. And sure. So it was always New York. Yeah, I couldn't wait to move to New York.
That's so, wow. So you start out at the UCB as well in New York?
It didn't exist there
yet.
It didn't exist. I wish it had. I would have been delighted to.
Right.
And a lot of like the sort of alternative comedy didn't exist yet either.
Right.
So it was, that's why it was like more like clubs. It was like,
right.
there was Luna Lounge down on the Lower East Side, but it was beyond that, it was mostly stand-up New York, Boston comedy. There was one in Soho. And then I lucked out and like, booked a sitcom immediately.
That's how it works.
Kids, and that's how you do
it. You do stand up for a few weeks and then you get the sitcom.
I know. That's it. And I was also like, again, like looking back, like if only the Ascension could have been that steady. And that's how it's been for the last 20 years.
Right.
No problems. It's just been effortless. Just that you just do it. You just book job after job forever.
Sure.
Yeah. So that was, I mean, truly, I feel like when you're the new kid, like, I mean, look, I know it's very, very hard to book the first. I think it's like, it's interesting once you've, there's another round of new kids. And then you're like, it's having to be like, then you have to really dig deep. It's like, all right, what do you got? Like, because you're not the new kid anymore.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, so now what? Like, what are you going to do?
Well, it's funny because you're describing being at Conan and thinking, oh, I want to be a guest on the show. I'm going to book a sitcom. And then you just did it.
I was a guest. I came back. I was a guest.
Yeah. And you
became a guest. They played the Welcome Back Cotter theme song.
And it was only a few years after your internship, which is probably the fastest intern.
Yeah, it was like 2 years. I think it was
pipeline.
2 years.
Yeah.
That was a fast turnaround. I know. I was like 22.
I love your career goal. The reason to get on a sitcom was just so you could be a guest on Conan.
I just want to see how comfortable the couch is.
Right, by the
way, it was so exciting. It was so fun. My whole family came. Yeah, it was great.
Oh, my God.
That must have been surreal in a way.
It was very weird. Yeah. It was very weird. And then I got to do it again when I was on Mad TV, and I remember it was like a big deal because Lauren produces SNL, so no Mad TV cast member had ever been a guest.
Oh, there was a blockade.
There was a blockade, and
so I got
to go do it, and then I remember some of the Mad TV cast members were like mad.
Hence the name of the show. That's what everyone's angry about.
They knew that's why everyone's so mad on Mad TV.
You found the loophole.
I found the loophole.
Man, you are savvy right from the get-go.
I know.
I need to get this internship. So when I'm on Mad TV, I can still go on the show.
I can still go on the show.
Just as I planned.
I heard a funny detail that you were in a movie and paired with someone else who was also an intern on the Conan show.
Oh, no way.
I believe it was his first job. I played...
You're like, it seemed like it was his first
job. No. Well, then he became like, literally, I remember, I think he had just graduated from Brown. I played John Krasinski's wife in Kinsey, and we played the most like sexually broken couple in America that were so broken that was when Kinsey knew he had to help.
Had to help.
He had to do a sex study because we were so sexually lost that, like, that we were the straw that broke the camel's back.
How did you access that character?
It was so hard for me. Oh, my God.
You grew up in such a small town.
I grew up in such
There's
a small
town. No sex up there.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me?
It was illegal.
It's actually still illegal. You can wear corduroy. You can wear chapstick. And you can do a nice firm handshake with a very handsome woman.
You can go apple picking.
You can clear brush with... You can clear brush with your hands. You can drink brown liquor. You can have a cow, and then you can just live and let live and push it down, down, down.
That's enough sex for some people.
Oh yeah,
just having a cow.
It's a lifetime's worth.
For sure, absolutely. What year? So you started in '95, Mike. When did you start, Jesse?
I didn't start until 2013.
What?
I know.
Crazy.
It was me and then Jesse. No one was hired in between. A slight gap.
I remember like Alec Berg and Jeff Schaefer did like a 3-week stint fresh out of Harvard.
Yeah. And then went on to Seinfeld.
Yeah. And then I remember Bob Odenkirk was a staff member, but he didn't live there. He like lived in LA and he flew in once. I think he was there once while I was.
Right. He worked out some crazy deal with them where like, you know, if I'm in town, I'll drop by 30 Rock.
I think he was a staff member. I think he was there for 1 week while I worked there. Uh-huh. And then it was Dino Stamatopoulos.
Sure.
And Marsh McCall.
Right.
And
Michael Gordon.
Michael Gordon. So sweet.
So sweet.
Oh, Dave Reynolds. Who wrote Finding Nemo.
Yeah.
And then Louis C.K.
Of course.
And then Robert.
Yeah. You've been very effusive about Robert Smigel's comedy. Was he influential for you? I mean, were you like...
I just found he was really nice to me. And I thought he was nice. And I thought he was like a mad genius. Like he just seemed... I think it was also because I got to be there during rehearsals. So it was fun watching them kind
cool.
of... Yeah, that part of the... I'm fascinated by how people make any kind of... I love making things. And so it was interesting to watch like the bread get made. You know what I mean? Like to watch them make changes, to see them work it out. And like sometimes the script would literally be delivered on a napkin. You know, like he would just write it out on a napkin. I think it was because I got to be there... in real time watching the changes and watching them sort of figure it out and watching he and Conan and Andy or whoever was in the sketch kind of finesse something that was fun.
Mm-hmm. And I think Robert's great at really focusing on trying to make something as good as it can be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's keep, it's not quite there yet.
Yeah, it can be like 3 minutes to showtime and he's like... completely unaware.
He drove my boss crazy because she was responsible for getting in the computer, but she also adored him, so she didn't really care. But she was like, she's like, I'm gonna fucking kill him, you know. But like, but she was so fond of him that like he could kind of get away with it with her. But she was responsible for transcribing this crazy handwriting,
right?
And like trying to get that all the departments needed in order to call the like, or the, even just the director to call the show, like just to fall, like to have a script.
It's such a critical part, the script of the show. And you'd go in and rehearse.
Yeah.
All these changes would be made. And then you're exactly what you described. All these departments are standing by and they're kind of like, you can verbally say, oh, you know what? We're getting rid of that puppet or we're adding a new puppet or this or that.
Right.
But until they get the actual script and see the changes... Especially, you mentioned the director. The director is just dead in the water till they get the new script. And all of this is happening at like 3:30 and the audience is coming in a half an hour.
Yeah.
And you have to, a lot of times we'd have to hold the audience out in the hallway just to run through a quick rehearsal. Or sometimes the audience would be in and we had to rehearse again. So we'd rehearse it in the control room.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
And I think it's something you just get used to. But the first few times, it's just terrifying because you don't think, you're just like, how's this all going to get done? But it would always get done at one level or another. And there'd be a show. So
I loved also the band. I loved the band so much. Like they were so nice and so talented. And, you know, they were just Jimmy Vivino. Like they were just, it was just like, those guys were really lovely.
Yeah, they were all great. And they're all, yeah, they're still all total sweethearts.
Yeah. And so talented, you know.
Except for Pender.
Yeah, it was fun. Like, it was definitely, everyone was nice to me, you know. Like, it was.
Because
you weren't annoying.
Because I wasn't annoying. Yeah.
Right.
You know, I'm a nice, fun person, and I have a New England work ethic. Yeah. So like that, you know, and I was reliable.
Do you feel like, I mean, was this your first experience with sketch comedy and then going on to Mad TV? Was there overlap there for you?
I had written sketches and written plays that I directed and stuff through high school. So, but as far as like, you know, it was interesting doing Mad TV because I did book a sitcom. Like, I didn't go up through the Groundlings, and UCB didn't exist. Right. So, like, I because I lucked out so quickly, like, I didn't go through the training grounds that I probably would have. Like, I would have done Second City or Groundlings, or if UCB existed, I would have done those. I actually ended up going back and doing Improv Olympic again, and then doing – even when I was on Mad TV, I went back – like in the summers off, I would go do the writer's lab at Groundlings.
Yeah.
Because I tested for SNL against Amy Poehler, and then Mad TV that year offered it to me.
And they were like, we can't hire two perky
two women, two blonde women, excuse me. Gross.
Both from New England.
Yeah,
no
we
way.
couldn't possibly have two women.
Not at the same time.
And so I actually, after that, went back and like, all of the characters that I had done, like, I just wrote them in my living room and submitted a tape. Like, I was aware that I was actually panicking when I tested that I was going to get the job because I knew I hadn't come up through Second City. I knew I hadn't done, like, none of them had been tested in public. I literally wrote them in my living room, made a tape, and got flown to New York.
Wow.
And,
like, oh, wow.
And I knew I didn't have the chops of the hours of, I knew I didn't have the toolbox.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that feeling of it's sometimes a curse to get an opportunity before you're ready for it.
Well, so Mad TV offered me the job that year because I tested too, and I said no.
Oh, wow.
Because I think there was some internal strife happening at Mad TV at the time, and I was just like, I just knew life was too short. I was like, I don't think I knew I didn't have the goods, and I just knew I didn't have it in me to put myself in that environment. So then a few years passed, and in the in-between, I was like, I'm not going to tell anybody, but I literally went – because when I did all the classes in Chicago, I got to do them all at once. So I did beginning, intermediate, and advanced all at once. So I never learned them in order. My secret was like, I never learned my letters, then my words, then my – like I didn't actually know how to properly – I felt like a fraud.
Right.
And so I went and I just started – I didn't tell anybody that I'd been offered Mad TV. And I just started at level one and I just – I went through all the classes. I learned how to do it. And then I went and did it. Like, and then I got the job. And then
And then you go back to Mad TV and you were like, now I'm ready.
Every year they would call. Every year they would call. I would say no. And then when I was ready, I was like, okay. Then I tested again.
Oh, wow.
I got it. And then on the summers, I would go do the writing labs at Groundlings because I'd never done like sketch writing. But I also think that's a very... I don't want to say, for me, like there was a book that came out after Lean In, like after Sheryl Sandberg's book came out. And there was this woman who's like, okay, you're saying Lean In, but like why, sometimes it's easier said than done. And this woman who was like a researcher at Stanford wrote this book that was basically like, a lot of times she'll see women coming out and men, but coming out, guys are just like, I'm going to go for it. If I fail, I'm going to go for it again. And the women are like, well, I'm going to train and I'm going to go like, they feel like they...
It's the imposter syndrome thing, yeah.
Yes, I wish that I had the balls to just be like, fuck it, girl, you booked the job, you got flown to New York for SNL, they gave you this one.
They gave you the job.
So, like, just fucking go do it.
Well.
Just go do it. Like, I wish I had known there was no reason to delay and that it's okay to figure it out as you... Like, I had the goods enough to get the job. Like, you'll fucking figure it out.
Right, because that's why people are doing those improv schools anyway, is to get those jobs.
And any guy would have done it. You know what I mean? Like, any guy would have done it. It's like looking back, it's like, oh, Arden, like, I wish I'd had enough confidence. Like, it's enough. It's enough. No more class. Like, you got it. You just go do, you wrote those characters. Nobody else wrote those characters. Just go do those characters and write another sketch of those
characters. You were waiting until you had the PhD, basically.
Right.
It was, I regret anybody out there listening with self-doubt, just and I think the world has changed with YouTube and the internet and TikTok and just do it. Just start doing it and just do it and do it and do it. And like, there's no there. You're fine. Just keep doing it. Like, just do it.
You're fine is such good advice.
When you said no, like, did you have an agent and manager and did they argue with you and go, what are you talking
good question.
About?
Yeah. Like, Arden, come on.
I said no, and then I went and fired my manager.
Oh, wow. How dare you get me a job?
I'll tell you why I fired him.
You're fine.
I'll tell you, he did deserve to be fired. I got myself the job because you know what? He didn't do shit. You know what he did? When I went to test for SNL, in the elevator, as I'm going to test, first of all, he didn't tell me it was going to be on camera. I didn't know. He didn't tell me any. I didn't know it was going to be at the monologue spot, like full screen test. Like, I didn't know. He didn't tell me any of that. And on the way there, the morning I was testing.
It's best not to know.
He told me, hey, break a leg, kiddo. They already offered it to Amy, but the money might not work out. He told me that right before I tested.
Oh, my God.
Oh, boy.
And that's why I fired him. I was like, dude, I didn't need to know that. Well, then why would they have paid to fly me here if it wasn't an option?
Right.
Like, so I didn't need to know that.
Yeah.
Right. What? Why am I here then? Like, if there's no job, like, I've booked jobs actually afterwards. They told me the plan was we were going to hire this other person and then we liked you. So we, you know, like I have gotten jobs that I've been told that I wasn't the initial pick for. And so to me, I didn't need some dude telling me that they didn't want me right before I tested. So I fired him.
Well, you had at least had enough self-confidence to do that. That was an act of self-love.
Hell yes. Hell yes.
And you, I mean, as an artist, because you have really done so many different mediums. I mean, you wrote a memoir.
It just came out in paperback.
Oh, amazing.
Yay. Paperback release.
If people were like, oh, the hardcover's too heavy. So heavy. This is like malleable. You can bend it.
Put it in a tote bag.
You can throw it in a cute tote. It's a cute book.
You can rip it into thirds and parcel it out that way.
Oh, my God. Whatever you need to do with that book, go for it.
Well, how was it writing a book? I mean, as somebody who loves collaborating that you've described, was it hard to dive into doing something?
Oh, doing a book is a journey. I mean, it's like so exciting. You're like, yay, I sold a book. Like, oh, fuck, I gotta write a whole book.
Shit.
So much writing.
Because I am definitely like a sprinter, not a marathon gal. I'm like, well, that's a lot of words. And it's also like a big thing to organize the structure.
Yeah.
It's unlike anything I've ever done. And it was, I say this now because it's done and like I'm proud of it. But like, the process is hard. I mean, writing a whole book is, it's definitely between you and your head's own worst fears about yourself. Like it's,
right. Yeah.
So to me, again, I'm all about tricking my inner critic. So that's why like when I get an audition, I do 15 times. So like in the beginning for me with this, it was like.
You wrote 15 books.
I wrote 15 books. And then I was like, okay, this is my favorite book. I was like, okay. Start with a word count. Start with a word count. And I did not start at page one. I started with like, start with the shittiest chapter that's, there's really no pressure on. Just start with like the smallest, lowest stakes chapter that's like chapter 11 or chapter 14, kind of like filler chapter. Start with a filler chapter,
filler
like sneak
chapter,
in through the dorm windows. And so I would have to do, I would set a timer. Have you heard of the Pomodoro technique?
Yes, I have.
I've heard of Pomodoro, the pasta sauce.
The tomato. Is it tomato?
The pasta.
Somebody told me about it. There's like a PDF that it feels like it was made in like 1972, but it's online. It's like a 3-page PDF. But basically they figured out, like these researchers figured out that people get things done best in 25-minute increments. And then not an hour, not 15 minutes, it's 25 minutes.
Ah.
And that, so the guy had a timer that looked like a tomato, so he called it the Pomodoro technique. And you need to be able to see your timer.
This sounds very scientific.
But I get so ADD. So basically, you turn off your internet, you turn off your phone, you can't go get snacks. For 25 minutes, your ass is in the seat doing whatever it is your little
task. I'm already out. You lost me at no internet.
And then so
and then no snacks.
But then you can get your snacks at your 5-minute breaks. Right. You can snack attack it out. And so I would commit, I would start with one a day and then just try to get like, so I would commit to like, okay, I'm going to try to do like 1,000 words today. Like,
I've heard that. Bang out 1,000 words.
Yeah, just bang out 1,000. So I started.
Don't judge it.
Don't reread it.
Right.
I started with just the page count. Mm-hmm. And then once like, it was, I had to do between 60 and 80,000 words and I ended up doing 73,000, which shocked me.
Wow.
Once I hit the word count, then I like printed it all out. I sort of rearranged some of the pages and then I did chapter by chapter cleanup. That's when the real writing began of like, it's the equivalent of I've done my 15 times of my audition.
Right.
This was like, okay, yes. I went to Michael's Crafts. I bought the felt and the glitter and the glue. Right, and now I've got all the fucking material.
Right. Ready to make the float.
And now let's just like clean it up like one chapter at a time. And then I have a writing partner that I do scripts with. Uh-huh. Once I had it sort of cleaned up, I would like hire him, let him read it. And then we would read it out loud and like go through and like clean it up together. And that's how I did it.
Reading out loud's a good trick too,
dude. It's. I mean,
it's brutal though.
It's hard.
It's brutal, like, dude.
Yeah, it sounds brutal, but
it was brutal.
But you have. It sounds like
you've got to force yourself.
Yeah.
A real trust relationship with your partner. Yeah.
Can I ask you one thing else about a memoir?
You can ask me anything.
I'm curious about how do you deal with the feelings of all the live people are still alive who you're
that was
about.
Hard. Mm. I was really nervous. I mean, look, I'm such a people pleaser. And this is a lot about the name. It's called Little Miss Little Compton. And I'm from a town of 3,000 people called Little Compton. And I'm like, and it's about my family, you know?
Right.
And so
yeah.
I was really scared. And I had a friend who, like my fanciest friend who's like my fanciest writer friend, my friend Tom Diggs, who was nominated for a Pulitzer play, like prize for a play. And he just told me, he was like, Arden, be brave in your writing. Just like, just try to write the book that you're too afraid to write. Mm. And then in the rewrite, check your motives. Like, why is it in there? Is it necessary? Is it kind? Like, do you have to put it in? Is it something you need to ask permission for? And then like, also remember, it is your story and you're allowed to tell your story and some people may not like it and you're an adult. There was a few people I asked permission for things. I asked my brother who in advance if he like wanted to read it. He said no. And
you said, are you sure? would you sign this paper, please?
Yes. But I was terrified. I mean, I had sleepless nights about that with the town. And I had a few friends who'd had memoirs come out. I mean, that really was a terrifying thing for me. And my friend said, it was more the people that I'm not super tight with, you know, that were like funny people in the town. Like the people that were big characters, I asked permission about most of the stuff.
Sure.
The people in the town, my friend said, she was like, Arden, she's like, no one was mad when I did mine. And this was, it was Sarah Colonna and Jen Kirkman both said to me, people are so excited to be seen. Everyone wants to be seen and remembered. They want to matter. They want to be remembered and they want to like, they are so proud. She's like, I had a guy that I wrote so terribly about and he was like, oh my God, I'm in a book. Like, she's like, people
she called
are
me
so
a fucking asshole.
Yeah. So basically she was like, people are like so self-centered that they just are so excited and proud that it's almost like if people you tell people that you do comedy, I'm sure you have this, or people are like, you can take this, you can use this. It's like,
yes.
Trust me, I'm never gonna take this. Like, I've never, but like, I was like, you can steal this, you should, like, people want to be documented. And so I found, at least to my face, nobody was upset. I was shocked.
That's all that matters.
Because if you read it, like, and then my brother, he's so nervous, he was like, everyone's gonna be so pissed, like, everyone's gonna be. And, like, nobody said anything.
You said we don't have a stoplight, and we do technically have a stoplight.
Yeah. So that was – it was interesting.
Yeah, that's really stressful.
But I was like, I would encourage, like, nothing good is done out of fear.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, particularly with comedy, like, you can't make something really fun and great if you're also terrified. You just can't. So, like – what would you write if you weren't afraid of what people were going to say? And then I thought it was good for the personal stuff of check your motives. There was certain stuff, you know, like my dad was a salty dog. And like, many female, bad dads make entertaining daughters.
Sure.
And so it was also like, giving the gist and not the war stories. You know what I mean? And I remember right. There was a reporter who read it who was so mad at me. He was like, your father, you really should have I was like, well, like the guy's dead. Like, why should, that's not what this book is. This is not Angela's Ashes. Like, I do not need to like.
Settle scores.
Oh, the reporter was mad that you didn't go far enough.
He wanted me to really stick it to my dad. Mm. And it was like.
Sounds like he's got daddy issues.
Yeah. I just felt like. You know, it's your story and also know what the book is. Like, this isn't that book. I think giving enough of a peek behind the curtain of, like, the gist of it, like, you get the idea, but this is my story. This isn't his story. And, like, you get the idea. And, like, then it becomes a completely different book. And it was
You wanted it to pass the Bechdel test.
Yes.
Not make it all about him.
And it was interesting, though, like, doing press for it, how – that's only a small part of the book, but how some people only wanted to talk about him. Mm. And it's like, that was even with just with like a little sprinkling of him.
Right.
You're like that sort of was like, really? That's the only thing you want to talk about is my bad dad? Trust me, it's not unique. Like, it's not a unique
guy
situation.
He's worried his children will write about him.
True story.
Well, Arden, we have to wrap up with you, but before we go, just are there any other personal favorite Conan memories that you have? Well, we didn't really get into this, but you talked in your interview when you came back to Conan the first time about having seen him naked.
Oh my God, I forgot about that. I did. I didn't see him fully naked. Did I see him fully naked?
You saw him changing, underwear. I guess.
That's right. I saw him in his, I think he was in like tidy whiteies.
That tracks.
That does track.
I think he was in tidy whiteies. Yeah. That's right. I had to go deliver something. I forgot. And I opened the door.
Boxer shorts.
And I think he had on tidy whiteies.
Oh, boy.
And he was in there. And I like was like, oh. And then I like, you know, like crept backwards out. I was like, oh, my God. It was a very tall, pale gentleman in tight, like, briefs. Like, and I'm like, oh, my God. That just happened.
He's so pale, you're like,
yeah.
I think those are underpants.
I couldn't tell. Maybe he's nude.
He might have been naked,
He might have been nude and just like fashioned like a Ken doll. Just like a smooth.
There's no
like,
fissure in crack. The back.
Smooth like a pear. That's right, yeah. I mean, it was so long ago. My brain, I do remember always every night, somebody's job was to put out Lauren's like Simon Pierce Pilsner glasses, popcorn, and Amstel Light.
Oh, with I
his,
heard about
that. With his, they had to put, like, there was like a monitor and
his backstage
mm-hmm. and his chair. And it had to be freshly popped popcorn, Simon Pierce Pilsner glasses, and Amstel Lights. And he never, it was like waiting for Godot.
Oh, he never showed up.
He never came. He never came.
Can we have the popcorn now? He's not showing.
Because I think that he could probably watch it on like the
on closed, the feed, yeah.
Yeah, he could just watch it on the feed in his office.
Sure.
Like he was at SNL doing his other show. Yeah. Like, so I'm sure he was just watching why, but it had to be set up every night. And I remember one person accidentally like sitting in it. Like you just couldn't.
It was like roped off area.
Yeah. It was right in the back. Yeah, I do remember that.
That's so funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
No, you've told us so much. And honestly, thank you so much. I feel like you've really demystified a lot of your creative processes, which is so useful. Mm-hmm. And it's something we love talking to creative people about.
Yeah.
Thanks.
And so much of it applies to so many different projects you've worked on. Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of it is really like, the sweat equity in the beginning, like just like the stuff that nobody wants to deal, like the unsexy stuff, so that then you can get to the magic of like just build the foundation so then you can go play. And like nobody wants to do it. And if you have to trick your brain, you have to, I have to pay my friend. I can't do it on my own learning the lines. Like I have to set the timer. I will look online. Like, and like, I'll just keep going for hours. So it's ways to trick my own.
Right.
Like inner critic or my own ADD to like just like the only way through is through. But like the payoff is done is better than great. Just complete it.
Right.
Just complete it. Just done is better than great.
There are no shortcuts.
No, there's no shortcuts. It's just roll up your sleeves and just get it over with badly. But it's just a matter of like just sweat equity of putting it in so that then you get to go do whatever trash thing you want to do. You know, I get to go watch Below Deck or like, you know what I mean?
Or whatever your Bachelor.
Whatever your garbage is. Like, yeah, I get to go watch The Bachelor. Like that to me, just like just go do your homework so then you can go play.
Right.
Well, but it's also it's nice to hear. I mean, I always appreciate when people are honest about the amount of work that things take because I think we have this. There's a myth about the artistic genius that just sort of shows up and it's like, it's just coming through me like from a, a higher power.
Yeah.
That's not real. And
a lot of people want to believe that so they can beat themselves up some more. Like, oh, they just have these magical abilities, you know?
Right.
Well, it's also even being realistic. Like I have a friend who's a former model who literally cannot not be a series regular. Like she'll go on, she could do comedy. So she'll go to a guest spot. And every single time they're like, she does one episode and they're like, they made her. That's not my experience. Like that's, so like I have to do the 15, like I have to go steal every job. Like I know I can put in the time to like at least be, if I'm going to stand a chance, if it's even actually an available job and not they already offered it to so-and-so, but they're working at the money.
Right. Like, Amy Poehler's already got the job, but you're going to steal it.
Yeah. If there's actually an available job, like I know I can't control certain factors about who I am or the package I come in or whatever, or what my voice sounds like or how old I am or what I look like. So, but I can control my preparation and I can control like what I bring to it. And then after that, it's out of my hands. And like, and you have to let it go. It's not personal. Mm-hmm. Like I have a well-balanced life and like figure if you need to figure out other streams of income so you're not demanding your art, like, you know, like so that you can have joy with stuff. So like just like in the beginning, I think people think that they can't have a B job. Like don't do it so you have to go get the job or your rent's not going to get paid. Like it's okay.
Yeah, that's too
there's
much
no
pressure.
There's no shame in having a, like a side hustle if you have to.
Yeah.
Yeah, also great advice. And then and that makes you less thirsty in the moment as well.
All of it. Which yeah, all of it. Like whatever you can do to eliminate the thirst so you can go and be present and like just go do be present, do a good job, bring some joy to it and be prepared and be on time. Don't be chaos. Yeah.
This is so much great advice. Thank you so much, Arden. You're a delight.
Ah,
it was a pleasure.
Can't wait to see what else you go off and do next.
Oh, my God, Jesse, Mike, what a delight. Well,
no,
people can get my book, Little Miss Little Compton, now in paperback. And then I host a very silly iHeartRadio podcast about the Bachelor franchise with comedians called Will You Accept This Rose?
And then,
and that's a job you're going to have the rest of your life because that show will never,
it will never end.
Oh my God.
Never go off.
I used to get like 4 month hiatuses, like, and now is there just
islands and
they're doing a second Bachelorette, and then they did the music one, and then they're going to do a so it was more like a seasonal thing for me, and now it's just never ending, which is fun. But
you're just doing all, you're covering all of them.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, iHeart pays me to do it.
Sure.
And it's fun, but it's like, it used to be like January through August. And now I'm like, ooh, this is a large part of my life.
Yeah.
But it's a little
what you wish for scenario.
But it's fun. It's actually strange how many friends it's brought me. Like, cool. And it's the weirdest, like, it's like, through this, I've become friends with Doug Benson. Like, who knew who, like, the weirdos that watch, like Jim Jeffrey. Jim Jeffries is coming to my garage on Wednesday.
Right.
Like,
when you're making it okay for people to come out as Bachelor.
Oh, exactly.
That's true.
Scott Aukerman is like a huge, you know, Carl Tart is like in my garage. Like, it's like all these strange.
Barack Obama. Well, thank you so much, Arden.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Have
Arden.
A nice day. Goodbye.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you, Arden, for joining us. By the time this airs, she probably will have a new book out.
Yeah.
So we'll have to update that.
No thanks to us. We've only slowed her down.
Hey, we've got a listener question.
Yeah, here it is. Hey. That's how it starts. That's not me. That's not
me. Could have been you, though. It sounds like you.
Hey. Can you tell us about the origin of the end of the show song? It's the part that's never on TV. Thanks, Ben Ratner. Thank you, Ben, for that question.
It's a good question. That's somebody who has obviously been to a live taping.
Right. At the end of every taping, I don't know when Conan started doing it, like the late 90s or something. When the show was over, the band would play the end theme. And towards the end of that, once the stage manager would say, hey, we're all clear, he would sing a song he ad-libbed once called the end of the show song.
He ad-libbed it the first time, but then every other time.
Well, I hope he ad-libbed it because there's not a lot to it. It's just like, it's the end of the show song.
The part that's never on TV.
I'm just wasting the studio audience's time now.
Everybody wants to go home and get drunk. And
then he just go.
Yeah.
Something like that. I'm sure I haven't done it justice, but that's it. The origin of it was just him, I guess, he ad-libbed it one night. The crowd loved it. And so then he was like, okay, that's how I'm going to. And you know what? Conan's kind of a creature of habit, especially around the show. Like, he likes certain little ceremonial things before the show.
Routine, yeah.
Yeah, things to kind of put his mind at ease.
Well, speaking of ceremonial things that he often did, at one point, because obviously the string dance I would put into that category.
Right.
At the top of the show.
Right. That became a nightly event.
And then at one point during the TBS show, he started inviting an audience member to come up. And then for some reason, somebody, I think, rubbed his nipple.
Right.
I think it was a guy.
Or I thought he just started.
Or maybe he started rubbing his own nipple.
He would do the string dance.
Yes.
And then he felt like the string dance wasn't enough.
Uh-huh. So he kept adding things to it.
Yeah. So he'd pull his jacket open and like wet his index finger.
Wet the index finger and then put out the fire on the nipple. That's
exactly
what it was.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because it was sizzling.
And then he started having audience members.
And then an audience member would come up and also rub the nipple.
Right.
And people knew what to do. It was like, they just, without any, it's almost instinctual, I think.
Yeah. And you know, it's unusual to have your incident of sexual harassment on video like that, where
night after night
you can bring it right to an attorney's office. I did a ad parody for a lawyer's office for people who had been forced to touch Conan's nipple
and suffered mesothelioma as a result.
After that, they were so traumatized they couldn't ring doorbells, like all the things they couldn't do anymore. But
yeah. Without
and
being
I was like,
triggered.
I'm going to do a sad parody, and he'll stop doing it after he sees this.
No, but it put the word out, so more audience members knew what to do.
Yeah, it didn't change anything.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, getting back to the end of this show song, I saw a clip of it once, and I it's not on like Team Coco, but it's out there on the internet. I think it was from The Tonight Show. But the great thing about it is... you see Conan singing it to the audience, and they're standing at attention, trying to get recognized by the audience. In the foreground is Jordan Schlansky.
Oh,
it's a great rare sighting of him.
Oh, perfect. In action. We end up talking about Jordan a lot. I feel like we're trying to lure him back on the show.
Have we been talking? When else have we talked about him?
We talked about him another week. Oh, okay. When we talked about Cortona.
Oh, right. I felt that was more a discussion of the city of Cortona.
That's true.
Well, I don't know if we could get him, but...
I don't know either.
You know, if people want us to talk to Jordan, I'm sure we could make that happen.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Sounds like a threat.
I think we should, if we're going to do it, we should do it in Cortona.
Oh, yeah.
Don't you think? I mean, we can ask...
I agree.
I assume Team Coco would be willing to pay.
They must have that in the budget.
Right. And I think listeners would know... Oh, wow, they're really in Cortona. It's really making a difference.
Yes.
For this audio experience.
So if you're listening to this and you're a fan, please demand that Team Coco fly us to Cortona.
Right. With or without Jordan. That's optional.
Jordan can still be here. Right. But we need to be in Cortona.
Or even just one of us, and we'll pull straws and see who gets to go. Well, thank you for that thank you for that obscure question.
But we do need more questions. And in fact, we are running low on voicemails. So don't be shy.
Yeah, we want to play voicemails just to mix it up.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
We like hearing your voices. It makes us feel like you're real humans.
And the number is 323-209-5303. So please, don't be shy. Give us a call.
And I'll still give you the email. It's insideconanpod@gmail.com.
Right.
And you know, you can also rate the show.
20 stars.
Uh-huh.
And as always, our theme is by John Williams. I don't think a lot of people know that.
That's right. One of his lesser hits. Mm-hmm. Please leave us a review and tell us how to get out of this episode. We like you. Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast, is hosted by Mike Sweeney and me, Jesse Gaskell.
Produced by Sean Doherty. Our production coordinator is Lisa Byrne.
Executive produced by Joanna Solotaroff, Adam Sachs, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco.
Engineered and mixed by Will Beckton.
Our talent bookers are Gina Batista and Paula Davis.
Thanks to Jimmy Vivino for our theme music and interstitials.
You can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts.
And of course, please subscribe and tell a friend to listen to Inside Conan on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or whatever platform you like best.
It's the Conan Show. Put on your hat. It's the Conan Show. Try on some spats. You're gonna have a laugh. Give birth to a calf. It's Conan.
This has been a Team Coco production.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 bacon bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the bacon cheese slider, 1921 bacon cheese slider, or chicken bacon ranch slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.